Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Quantum Shift by Kyle Johnson, narrated by Stephen Graybill. Chapter 1. The Shift. Now let's move to Ukemi. Troyus's teaching voice easily filled the dojo, overwhelming the mutters from the students as they moved into position to practice falling safely. Troyus's gaze snapped to the pair of students murmuring under their breath, silencing them instantly. McCarty, Gonzalez, the instructor spoke with deceptive mildness, moving to stand in front of the teenage boys. You think just because you've gained a new cue, you don't need to practice falling anymore? McCarty, the taller of the two, and the unusual ringleader, glanced quickly at the short, dark-haired Gonzalez and back to the sensei. Troyus stood taller than either of the teens by several inches and was at least 50 pounds heavier, and the blonde McCarty obviously needed a moment to gather his courage before speaking.
"Sensei Drakos?"
the boy said hesitantly, not meeting his teacher's gaze.
We just don't understand why we have to work on Ukemi every week. I mean, we know how to fall already."
The boy's words cut off as Troyus grabbed the lapel of the student's gi, nudged him backwards slightly, then swept the boy's right foot out with his own left foot. He held the gi tightly as McCarty fell, slowing him down so that the boy wouldn't get hurt when, as Troyus had expected, he reached his left hand down to catch himself and slow his fall. Gonzalez winced visibly as McCarty struck the mat and straightened into his attention stance, but Troyus was having none of that. "So tell me, Gonzalez," he demanded calmly from the co-agitator, "did McCarty perform his Ushiro Ukemi correctly?"
"No, sensei,"
Gonzalez said heavily.
"And what did he do wrong?"
"He reached for the floor, sensei," Gonzalez answered.
"And why, McCarty?" Troyus continued, glancing down at the prone student. "Is that the wrong thing to do?"
"Because I could break my wrist, sensei,"
the blonde replied in a defeated tone. Troyus helped the young man back to his feet with a half smile.
"Precisely. Now let's begin with Ushiro Ukemi, since McCarty needs so much work on them."
He glanced at the brown belt student standing off to the side.
"Senpai, please count them out for me."
The older student nodded and turned to the class.
"Ushiro Ukemi, on my count. Ichi."
As one, the assembled students tucked their chins, bent their knees, and rolled back onto their backs, slapping the tatami mat with both hands as they did before rolling back to their feet. The senpai continued the count, and Troyus moved through the class, offering correction and encouragement. When the class was finished falling backward and sideways, Troyus had them partner up for shoulder roll drills. At the end of the class, Troyus had the students lined up in saiza position, sitting on their knees with their hands resting on their thighs. "McCarty brought up a good question today," he told them. "Why do we keep practicing our falls when you've been doing them for 6 months now?" A young woman raised her hand and Troyus nodded at her.
"So we don't forget them, sensei,"
the woman said brightly, and Troyus smiled.
"Not precisely," he corrected gently. "Everyone, clap your hands one time."
The students glanced at him, puzzled, but each clapped their hands, completely out of sync with the others.
"Good. Now tell me, McCarty, did you have to think about how to do that?"
The blonde teen looked confused but shook his head.
No, sensei," he replied. "I just did it."
"Exactly," Troyus agreed with a grin. "You just did it. When you clap your hands, you don't think about how to do it. You don't aim your hands and concentrate. You just do it, with muscle memory and instinct. We drill these techniques over and over so that they become just as much a part of you as clapping your hands or throwing a ball. If you're in combat and you have to think about what to do,
You've probably lost. There's no time for that. You have to stop thinking and just be. Allow your mind and body to do what you've trained them to do. When you fall, and you will fall, trust me, your body should relax into it naturally. He glanced up over the students' heads at the rows of trophies and medals lining the display case. It said that it takes 10,000 hours to become a master at something, he told them. If you practice an hour a day, that's almost 30 years. When you think of it that way, 6 months isn't very much, is it? It was a slightly chastened group of students who bowed out of the dojo that night, but Troyes took it in stride. He knew that some of them wanted to become experts right away and were disappointed learning that it took years to earn a black belt in any serious martial art, much less when learning three at once. Those usually dropped out after a year, figuring they'd learned enough to get by. He was okay with that. The ones who stayed more than made up for the dilettantes who left every couple of months. "They're a pretty good group, aren't they, Sensei?" his senpai asked, helping him pack up the grappling dummies and striking targets. "I'll tell you in 6 more months," Troyes snorted. "They've got decent potential, though. A few of them are too impatient, but I think most will last the year, at least. At least until the 20th time they hear your 'Judo is earth and water' speech, Sensei," the student chuckled. "That's usually when they start heading out the door." Troyes barked a laugh. "Judo is the water flowing on the earth," he corrected. "The earth is the foundation that supports you. The water is the yielding flow that lets you control your opponents. Come on, if you're going to be telling these stories one day, you'll need to get them right, Oscar." Oscar looked at his instructor in mock astonishment. "You think I can't quote that story verbatim?" he asked. "Or the one about the maiden and the bandit? Or..." "Okay, you know my stories," Troyes agreed. "You just have to make sure that Liz tells them right while I'm on vacation." The big man grabbed the heavy duffel bags and lifted them easily, almost unnoticeably favoring his left knee as he walked. The old injury barely bothered him anymore, and he'd put the incident that caused it more or less behind him. Although he refused to call it an accident, still, so he guessed it wasn't totally behind him. "I still don't get why you always drive all the way to the UP each year," Oscar shook his head, carrying a single bag and following his teacher. "Isn't there camping closer to Chicago?" Troyes grunted and carefully stacked the bags in the equipment room, even though there was plenty of space in the old warehouse for everything. Good habits were habit-forming, after all, and so were bad ones. "I like the Upper Peninsula. It's the best part of Michigan. Plus, McKeever Cabin is way out in the middle of nowhere. Edison Park, and Chicago in general, really, just gets too much for me sometimes. I need the peace and quiet to reboot a little." Oscar shook his head in disbelief. "Yeah, but no electricity?" he persisted. "No running water? No cell phone service? What do you even do up there?" "Fish," Troyes said simply. "Hike? There's swimming, canoeing, bow hunting. Heck, I'll spend hours just enjoying the silence some days. It's great for practicing meditation. Plus, I can train all I want, and I don't have to worry about anyone bothering me." Oscar shrugged. His teacher's obsession with training and meditation were both well known in martial arts circles. "Well, it'll be weird not having you here for the week," he said, apparently surrendering. "Liz can be a little hardcore sometimes." "It's just a week," Troyes reminded him gently. "She's a good sensei. She just pushes you brown belts harder because she knows you can handle it." Liz was the school's resident karate instructor, and she was a good one. She was great with the younger students, and she knew how to motivate the older ones to keep them from being lazy. Like Troyes, she might have been an Olympic medalist or world champion if she hadn't gotten injured, and he knew he was lucky to have her. Unlike him, She hadn't had more than a decade to get used to the idea of being unable to compete, so she sometimes pushed her students a bit harder, in hopes of experiencing a championship vicariously through one. He changed out of his gi back into his street clothes, taking a clean pair from the travel bag he had with him, his mind a million miles away as he did. He was truly looking forward to his trip up north. The cabin was something of a sanctuary for him, one he went to twice per year. He was totally cut off from the world there, except for the occasional hunter, hiker, or fisherman he ran into, and those usually stayed well away from him. Glancing at himself in the dojo's mirror, he could see why. He stood 3 inches over 6 feet, and his training regimen left him solidly muscled, if not as defined as he was back when he was competing. He kept his black curly hair in a buzz cut. It was just easier to maintain that way. Plus, it made it easier to ignore that, at 42 years old, he was dealing with a slowly receding hairline. And his odd gray eyes were piercing and tended to make people uncomfortable if he wasn't smiling. After locking the school up for the night, he bid Oscar farewell and tossed the bag into the passenger seat of his expedition with a contented sigh. Troyus was a night owl. He preferred to sleep until mid-morning and stay up all night when he could. Mornings were overrated, in his opinion. They were bright, loud, and filled with people demanding things of you. Troyus didn't really like people, but people seemed drawn to him for some reason. It was weird. They were either totally intimidated by him, or they were fascinated with him, and intruded on any moments of solitude he might want to get. At least, at night, most people were in bed and left him alone. Plus, nighttime was the best time for gaming. He'd gotten hooked on video games during his convalescence, years ago, and despite the fact that in gamer years he was an old man, he still managed to slap around most of the Gen Z crowd in PvP duels with no problem. He tended to prefer MMORPG games or first-person shooters, but he was fine with 4X and city-building games, too. About the only kind he refused to play were fighting games. His days of competing in martial arts were behind him, and the games didn't offer remotely the same experience as being inside a ring. The drive to the UP would probably take him a bit over 6 hours. Troyus rarely went over the speed limit and was content to drive up the Edens, what locals called the north part of I-94, in the second-to-rightmost lane, coasting along a mile or two under the speed limit. People zipped past him, all in a hurry to get somewhere. But he figured that he'd get where he was going eventually. There was no real need to rush there. A person in a rush is what had led to his injury, in fact. He had always believed that a solid foundation would lead to victory. All you had to do was wait for your opponent to make a mistake, while being patient enough to avoid making one of your own. The idiot that had taken out his knee in an illegal leg scissors hadn't felt the same way. He'd been in a hurry to win the fight, and when he couldn't do it in the first few minutes, he'd gotten stupid and taken dumb risks. Speed kills, he reminded himself, as another car buzzed past him. It had certainly killed his career, after all. He pushed the somber thoughts out of his head and turned on the radio to an oldies station, wincing as he realized that the music of his childhood was considered oldies now. He lost himself in the music, enjoying the radio while he could. Once he got past Green Bay, stations would be less frequent, until eventually there'd be a handful of choices once he was in the UP. The hours slid by mindlessly as he drove, stopping only to gas up and grab some coffee. That was a talent of his. While most people found meditation boring and difficult, Troyus had no problem putting his thoughts aside and just being in the moment. It made a 6-hour drive in the darkness much more bearable, although he was yawning and blinking tiredly by the time he turned onto Forest Road 2613 and drove slowly toward the cabin. It was late enough that he didn't expect to see a ton of wildlife, but the forests were often far more active at night than they were during the day, and he didn't want to hit anything. He was fine killing a deer with a bow while hunting. Somehow running one down with a car didn't seem very sporting. The road stopped a quarter of a mile or so from the cabin, and Troyes gratefully threw the expedition into park and leaned back in the seat, his eyes heavy. He forcibly roused himself, grabbing his overnight duffel and stepping out into the crisp October night. The cool air revived him instantly, chill enough to bite at his skin, but not enough to be freezing, yet. He tossed on a light jacket, locked the car, and trekked the dirt path that led to the cabin, using his flashlight to light his way. It was a decent hike, and he had a cart in the truck to carry all of his supplies, since the cabin basically came with nothing but firewood for the wood-burning stove. At least it wasn't snowing. In the winter, you had to park a mile away and ski or snowshoe in, dragging everything in a pull-behind sled, since snowmobiles were prohibited. In December and January, the snowfall here was measured in feet rather than the inches that Chicago usually got, and while Troyes liked seclusion, that was a bit much, even for him. He located the key and opened the door, frightening a pair of mice that had taken up residence beneath the cold stove. Hanging his flashlight overhead, he spent a few minutes getting a fire lit in the stove and loosely making the bottom bunk on one of the bunk beds. The cabin wasn't cleaned between visits, so he would need to check the mattress in the morning. But for the moment, a clean sheet and comforter were good enough for him to strip to his skivvies and collapse into bed. He bolted awake some time later, a strange buzzing sound filling the cabin and jolting him from sleep. At first he thought the sound was some sort of large insect that had managed to infiltrate the small room, but after a few moments he realized that the noise was coming from outside. "Probably some idiot camper who brought a generator," he muttered, rubbing his eyes and laying down, trying to fall back to asleep. "If you need electricity, maybe this just isn't the place for you." His thoughts were scattered as suddenly a voice burst into the cabin, accompanied by a flashing wall of text that filled his vision. He clapped his hands to his ears, but the sound seemed to be coming from inside his head. The voice had a strange game show announcer quality to it, and he was surprised that he didn't hear some sort of brassy fanfare as it spoke, narrating the words that appeared in his vision. "Phase shift incoming. Your local sector has been selected to undergo a quantum phase shift in order to increase its habitability. Any humans who survive this process will receive more information on these changes. Expected survival rate 1-5%. Phase shift begins in 3, 2, 1. Commence phase shift." No sooner had the voice and text spoken than a flash of strange light swept through the cabin, the radiance seeming to spread from every part of the room at once, the color of it something he couldn't quite describe or even remember. A moment later, agony erupted throughout Troyes's body. It felt like every cell in his body was on fire. His blood seemed to boil in his veins, and his heart pumped torment throughout his dying organs. As he reflexively curled into the fetal position on the bed, he felt liquid running down his cheeks and lips and knew that his eyes and nose were bleeding freely. His heart felt ragged in his chest, and as darkness began creeping into the edges of his vision, part of him welcomed it as a release from the pain. Troyes knew that part of himself, though, and he savagely put it down. That was the part that had wanted to give up after his injury, the part that wanted him to take a blue-collar job and give up on training forever. It would have been easy. Not many people recovered well from the unhappy triad of torn ACL, MCL, and meniscus. But Troyes had never been one for the easy route. He'd forced himself to rehab, suffered through years of painful therapy, and recovered most of his strength and endurance. His knee would never be strong enough for competition, but many people with that severe of an injury limped badly for the rest of their lives. Most people told him he'd been lucky, but he knew the truth. He had made his own luck. He hadn't given up then, and he wasn't about to now. He forced himself to take a deep, shuddering breath, then another, focusing on the slow, rhythmic movement. "Breathe," he repeated mentally, turning his thoughts away from the pain. "Breathe." Despite what others had insisted should happen, he'd never been able to use meditation to reduce pain, but he could force himself to ignore the agony. "Breathe." Each breath was a victory, a sign that he lived, another moment stolen from the darkness that was still pressing on him. "Breathe." Was it his imagination, or was that darkness receding from his vision? He refused to consider it. It didn't matter. All that mattered was this moment, not the future. "Breathe." Pain raged in his body, ravaging him from the inside out, and all his focus was on the slow rise and fall of his chest. "Breathe." He was sure now. The darkness was pulling back, the pain slowly receding. It spiked and ebbed, but he ignored it, concentrating only on holding to this moment. Each breath was easier now, and it was as if each lungful of air was drawing in new energy, restoring his body and pushing back the shadows in his vision. He took a final deep breath and almost burst into tears as the last of the pain faded and vanished. His clean sheet looked like he'd been murdered on it. Blood and other fluids he didn't want to think about stained it beyond redemption. He'd never get it clean, especially not in the nearby lake or using the hand pump outside the cabin. He gathered his strength and staggered drunkenly to his feet, grasping the side of the upper bunk to stabilize himself. He was dreadfully weak, but with each breath he could feel his strength returning. Wearily, he yanked the sheet from the bed and unthinkingly stuffed it into the glowing embers of the stove, slamming the door shut. He saw a flare of orange as the sheet caught fire, and as he did, he could have sworn he saw a shimmer of red light flash from the stove. But he chalked it up to exhaustion and sat back on the bed, wondering what the hell was going on and what had just happened to his body. Chapter 2. Character Creation. As Troyes glanced down at himself, trying to see if the strange pain had damaged him in any way, the strange voice began speaking again, accompanied as before by a wall of text that simply appeared in his vision and hung there, no matter how he turned his head. "Congratulations, Earthling! You have survived the phase shift. Expected survival rate 1-5%, actual survival rate 2.33%. As one of a small percentage of humans to survive this change, you have the chance to become more than you ever dreamed. In this new reality, all things are possible, even what you would have deemed magical or mystical before. First, you must choose your path in this new world." Troyes shook his head and sighed in relief as he suddenly realized that he was dreaming. He'd been so exhausted he'd collapsed into bed without checking it and was probably getting eaten by bugs. He figured that the buzzing sound of the generator outside, the bug bites, and his earlier thoughts about his injury and the video games that had helped him deal with the long hours of convalescence had all come together to create this incredibly vivid, if somewhat morbid, dream. "Only 2.33% of people in the world surviving?" he thought incredulously. "If there are 7 billion people, that's something like 15 million people living, right? Or wait, would it be 150 million? I don't know, I suck at math, but it's still a lot of dead people either way." Relaxing, he let his eyes drift back up to the scrolling text. He'd heard that you couldn't read in dreams, but then he'd also heard that if you hit the ground when you fell in a dream, you'd die. He hit the ground in his dreams a bunch of times, and he was still breathing. So he guessed that a lot of what people thought about dreams was probably BS. First, you must choose your path in this new world. There are three main paths you may choose from: the mage, the adept, or the savant. A description of each is listed below. Choose the path that speaks most to you, as choosing an unsuitable path will probably lead to a quick death. The mage. The mage utilizes mana, the external energy that cycles through the world, to power their abilities. A mage gathers power to themselves and directs it outward. This means that while they are excellent at affecting the world around them, they have great difficulty using their mana on themselves. Mages benefit from a high intellect score, helping them to learn and master the arcane rituals they use. The adept. The adept is, in many ways, the diametric opposite of the mage. An adept uses their internal energy, called ki, to empower themselves and their abilities. An adept turns their power inward and therefore has difficulty affecting anything outside of touch range with their abilities. Unlike a mage, an adept's powers are used intuitively and come from a deeper understanding of the self and their chosen energy, because their power flows through them at all times. Adepts are often best served by a high endurance score. The savant. The savant is a hybrid of mage and adept, a person able to use both mana and ki, albeit in much more limited ways than either the mage or the adept. The savant turns their abilities toward altering the world about them by creating and empowering various objects, meaning they have difficulty affecting living things of any kind. Savants gain their abilities by imposing their visions of reality on the world and thus benefit most from a high will. Please choose a path. This is a weird, freaky dream, he mused as he read through the options. The different paths, he supposed they were kind of like classes in other games or maybe specializations in some of the shooter games, relied on ability scores, but he didn't even know what his ability scores were. How was he supposed to min-max his build when he didn't know what was high and what was low? Well, he supposed the descriptions gave him a pretty good idea of what the abilities were supposed to do, and Troyes knew himself well enough to figure out what he'd be good at. The mage seemed like some kind of wizard-scholar combo, and he'd never liked to play wizards in games. They were mostly lopsided characters, totally focused on one thing, usually damage, but sometimes crowd control or summoning, and weak in everything else. He preferred hybrid characters. Plus, he was honest enough to admit that intellect wasn't his strong suit. Mage was a no-go. As far as hybrid characters went, it looked like Savant was the clear choice. Reading through it, though, it felt like a crafting class to him. Sure, crafting was cool and useful, but he liked PvP, player versus player, and crafters were usually weaker overall in combat. He didn't want to play a character that made really great stuff for everyone else to go out and fight with. Which just left Adept. A quick read-through made the class sound kind of like a monk, or one of those kung fu practitioners from the movies. While that wasn't his thing, really, he'd spent too much time explaining to students over the years that, no, they would not be learning how to do a Kamehameha wave, or whatever the thing was called. It still sounded like more fun than the other two. Shrugging, he selected Adept, and the text flashed and vanished. A moment later, the voice resumed, accompanied by more text. Excellent! You have chosen the path of the Adept. Hopefully this will prove to be a wise choice. Your next step is to choose a totem animal that will help you decide the best way to walk the path you've chosen. When you next sleep, you'll be given the chance to choose a totem. Choose wisely, as the choice you make will guide your steps for the rest of your life. however short that may be. Good luck and welcome to your new
sample complete. Ready to continue?